Aleppo is arguably one of Syria's most important cities, not only because of its size, but because of its strategic location close to Turkey, from where arms and militants have freely flowed for years. Now, that vital route has been cut off to militants, and the city is on the brink of liberation. Russia and Syria talk of amnesty for those who surrender, separate safe passages out for both militants and civilians, and humanitarian aid. For those who have asked repeatedly for the fall of President Assad, this will certainly be a major loss. We will discuss the anticipated liberation of Aleppo and its consequences in this edition of the debate. Well, our guests for this debate are managing editor and columnist at Veterans Today, Mr. James W. Dean, who is joining us live from Atlanta. And we're also joined by professor at Johns Hopkins University, Professor Daniel Serber, who is joining us live from Washington. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Professor, I'll start with you. How much of an effect do you think the cutting off of arms routes for militants will change the facts on the ground in the Syria crisis?
Well, if you're referring to the siege of Aleppo, I think I agree that Aleppo is about to fall if it hasn't already fallen. I wouldn't describe that as a liberation. I would describe it as a conquest by an autocracy.
Okay, and Mr. Dean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think the a lot of the people of Aleppo would disagree, particularly the ones that have lost all their property. They've had their businesses looted and trucked to Syria. And they've basically been used in a Western geopolitical power game where the city of Aleppo, the gem of Syria in terms of the economy, has just been totally destroyed during this regime change because the West just does not like who's president of the country, despite winning an election a couple of times, one of which I attended. So everyone's been waiting for this, and we're hoping that it can happen without a bloodbath to stain it, because the West now would like to have a lot of civilians killed so they could blame, try to mar the event by saying the Russians and the Syrians slaughtered civilians indiscriminately. I expect to hear that in the next couple of days.
Professor Serber,
have slaughtered civilians with great abandon. There's no question about that. And most of the destruction is, in fact, due to the actions of the Russian Air Force and the Syrian armed forces.
Okay, but Professor Serber, to be fair, if the Syrian army itself is trying to liberate a city, that would be seen as a liberation, wouldn't it, considering that's within Syrian territory, and the fact that many of these militants that have come over from the Turkish border freely with arms and ammunition supplied by other countries such as Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, those would be seen as foreign-backed militants, wouldn't they?
Well, in my book, liberation makes people free. When you take a city in a military assault in your own country, that doesn't sound like liberation to me. That sounds like domination and autocracy, which is being reimposed. There have been no free and fair elections in Syria, and Mr. Dean knows that well.
Okay, so Mr. Dean, an army taking over its own country's city, how do you feel about that?
Well, the country's under assault. And I was there in 2014. I was in Homs on election day and traveled to about five polling places. We interviewed quite a number of people. And we saw the people there, they weren't about to change a leader in wartime. Assad, of course, he's got opposition, and the opposition did run a couple of candidates. But Assad basically was synonymous with the army. And they knew that Assad and the army had kept the country from being carved up by the Western supporters of the terrorists. And they knew what was going to happen if these jihadis were put over them. So they weren't about to vote Assad out of office. And that's not a rigged election. That would be like having voted Roosevelt out of office in World War II. It just never would have happened. So we're hopefully thinking that this will stop the killing, and the peace talks will finally go on, and a lot of these jihadis will melt away. And unfortunately, they'll probably be going and get recruited to go somewhere else and start murdering and pillaging and robbing and raping in some other country that the West has decided to employ their services.
Okay, Professor Sarwar, I'm sure you have a comeback to that, but just hold on to your thoughts. I just want to go to our viewer comments. Our viewers are taking part in this conversation. Let's listen to those comments, and we'll be right back.
Good. Hopefully the Syrian army will be able to restore some normalcy and peace to the people of Aleppo. Well done. Syrian army kill all Takfir terrorists and take back all lands from them for the future of Syrians. The sooner this war ends, the better for the Syrian people. God bless Syria. Strong, resilient, blessed country. What about the women and children of Eastern Aleppo? What will they do? I don't understand. Someone please explain. Liberation of Aleppo is the second last nail on Takfiri, Salafi and Wahhabi-minded terrorists backed by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, Israel and the United States. May Allah keep Syria safe from terrorism and their masters.
Okay, let's not get back to our guests. Professor Sarwar, of course, I want to get a reaction to what Mr. Dean had said there before we went to those comments. And I also wanted to add this on, if you allow me. We do know that there are foreign countries who are supplying arms and even fighters or militants, as the government, of course, Syrian government would see them. I'm wondering, how do you think that they would react when Aleppo is taken back by the government?
First of all, it's important to understand that the United States has been fighting jihadis in Syria in a very serious way. It's been attacking the Islamic State. It's now trying to make arrangements with Russia to focus attacks on Jabhat al-Nusra. There are no jihadis in the employ of the United States at all. There are some Syrians who get some assistance from the United States in resisting the attacks by the Syrian government on civilian populations. That's absolutely true. But they're not jihadis, and they are not terrorists. They're people who have taken up arms against an unjust dictatorship, and they're seen as freedom fighters in the United States. And seems to me that people in Iran should be thinking about that and whether they are on the right side.
Okay, so Mr. Dean, I want to get your reaction to that, because, you know, we have seen American weapons ending up in the hands of what Professor Sarwar would call jihadis or terrorists, militants, whatever you want to term them.
Well, I certainly would. I've been a member of the Association for Intelligence Officers since 1999, and it's an open secret amongst the old hands that the CIA has been involved in using and training and keeping terrorist proxies left over from the Afghanistan war to employ in all kinds of regime change schemes in the Mideast. We even have the training camps, the Chechens in the Pensacola Gorge in Georgia is still operational. And they have training facilities that they're even using US contractors to provide supplies to. This is a huge scandal, which the U.S. media is staying away from 100%. But it's no secret inside the intelligence community. Those of us that basically worked during the Cold War, when we had a real adversary and we weren't manufacturing them now. So there's a lot of us that would like to see this out in the open. We would like to see their forces defeated. And we also want everyone that was exposed in supporting terrorism, they have to pay the price they should under international law for doing so.
Okay, so Professor Sarwar, you know, it all comes back down to one issue, doesn't it? Because Syria from the get-go, as well as Syria's allies, have asked that the Syrian people lead any process to decide who should lead their country and what kind of a government they should have in office. And I'm wondering, do you think that's something that the United States, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Qatar, all these countries are willing to accept? Because they haven't seemingly yet accepted that.
No, I think they do accept that. I think that's what they want to see happen, and they're convinced that it cannot happen with Bashar al-Assad in power. I would underline also your question about armaments for the jihadis. If you count the armaments the jihadis have, I would say they have at least as many Iranian and Syrian government weapons as they have weapons from the United States. I mean, that doesn't lead me to accuse Iran or the Syrian government of arming them. There's obviously an enormous traffic in weapons in Syria, and it's a mistake to blame the United States or the coalition for weapons that happen to end up in the hands of jihadis. Most of the weapons in their hands are not from the United States or from its coalition partners. The United States is notoriously careful about who gets its weapons and which weapons they get.
Okay, Mr. Dean, I think we should address that, because that's quite a big statement. And with due respect to Professor Serwer, I haven't heard of Iranian weapons ending up in the hands of any terrorists or what he would term jihadis. What do you know about that?
Not very much. And really, he's kind of a miscast it. The U.S. weapons that would end up in the hands of the jihadis, they've just gotten it from our allies in Saudi Arabia and Qatar, who have huge amounts of these. But most of the weapons that the jihadis have gotten have been coming from Eastern Europe, old Soviet Union type places. They're very easy to buy there from corrupt governments and government officials that want to sell these things for cash. So that's where a lot of it's coming from. There have been recent stories on it just in the last couple of days. And the CIA basically has set up most of these supply routes, even starting back when Libya, when they were looting the Libyan depots and moving those in. So the CIA has been doing this for a long time. They're very good at it, and they've gotten away with it. But certainly we all know that they're doing it.
Okay, Professor Serwer, I don't want to change the topic too much, but I do want to ask, you know, when President Assad says that he's opened up three corridors for civilians to be able to leave Aleppo safely, and secondly, a fourth corridor is opened up for militants who surrender to be able to leave safely as well, and humanitarian aid is supposed to go in, and the United Nations wants to cooperate with the Syrian government in providing humanitarian aid to eastern Aleppo, where the militants had control, I'm wondering, all of the above doesn't seem like a government which, a dictatorship. I mean, as in, you know, the descriptions of President Assad just don't parallel with what his actions are when it comes to Aleppo, humanitarian aid, safe passage for civilians, even amnesty for militants. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I recommend that you ask the UN what percentage of its requests to deliver humanitarian assistance throughout Syria have been approved by the Syrian government. It's a very low percentage. I'm not familiar with some of the most recent offers that you're talking about in Aleppo, but the record is absolutely clear for the last 4.5 years. There is no willingness on the part of the government in Damascus to allow a serious flow of humanitarian assistance into areas it regards as in opposition hands. And the hospitals, the schools, and other public facilities have been systematically targeted, not only by the Russians, but also by the Syrian government. This is a horrendous series of attacks against civilians for which there will someday be some sort of accountability. For the moment, it won't be possible. The regime has the upper hand. I doubt there'll be a political settlement because the regime has really no interest in one at this point.
Okay, so Professor Sirwar, if we want accountability for civilian deaths, what about accountability at the hands of the U.S.-led coalition, which claims to be fighting Daesh, which has admitted it has killed innocent civilians as well in airstrikes?
Absolutely, it has admitted that. It has paid compensation in some cases. The United States is not perfect about acknowledging its killing of civilians, but it is a lot better than a lot of the other belligerents in Syria today. There's no question but that the Syrian government has attacked its own population massively, and for many years now, there has to be some accountability for that.
Okay, Mr. Dean, I want to, of course, get your thoughts on what Professor Sirwar there has said. And I want to obviously go back to that point that I made earlier with him as well, is that what kind of a government, if it is a dictatorship, would want to provide even amnesty to militants who are laying down their arms?
This is a government that knows something about maintaining the morale of its troops, without which you can't fight. And the troops don't want to have their lives wasted needlessly. So they're allowing to let these jihadis, and some of them are guilty of ruthless crimes that they've committed in Aleppo, walk free. And they can cross over to Turkey. They'll be welcome in Saudi Arabia and be staying in a five-star hotel until they find another throat-cutting job for them. Because they want to get them out. They want to save whatever housing that hasn't been destroyed already. They want to save what civilian lives. Everybody's tired of this. Everybody wants it over, and they want to get in and start rebuilding, because political support for Assad is going to come from the rebuilding and getting this over with. And the jihadis and the Western folks know this, so they're trying to figure out a way that they can steal him getting any popularity out of this. And they're up a tree now, because they beginning to see that that's going to happen.
Okay, gentlemen, we have about 2 minutes left, so I just want to get your final comments from both of you. Professor Sirwar, I'll start with you. Do you think that liberation or conquest, as you called it, of Aleppo and other major important strategic cities across Syria will encourage peace talks to go forward?
No, I think the regime has made it absolutely clear that it intends to fight to the last inch of Syria. And I don't think there'll be any reconstruction assistance either. I don't know where the government intends to get its help on reconstruction, but the Russians have said they won't pay. The Iranians aren't going to pay. And you can be pretty sure that the U.S. and the West Europeans aren't going to be too interested in paying either if Assad wins this fight.
Okay, and Mr. Dean, what do you think about that?
Well, that's going to be always going to be a very difficult situation. No one is going to want to own up for the cause of the destruction. But we know that a lot of outside countries have funded this, and they're going to continue to fund it in Iraq, unfortunately. So the record is clear. What's going on in Syria has also been going on in Iraq with some of the same players who are just as guilty of the massive destruction there. And they're supplying aid to Iraq. So I think aid is going to emerge. I disagree with the professor on that.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there at that, gentlemen. But of course, we do appreciate both of your contributions to this debate. That was managing editor and columnist with Veterans Today, Mr. James W. Dean, who had been speaking to us live from Atlanta. And we were also joined by Professor Daniel Sirwar, who is a professor at Johns Hopkins University, and he was speaking to us live from Washington. And of course, viewers, we appreciate your insight. It is posted on our social media. And of course, for watching. Until next time.